Dr. K. Wise Whitehead here on this first day of Black History Month. This is always a very interesting time of the year because it's the one time of the year that people are focused on and talking about Black history in a positive way. It's interesting because on an everyday basis, we talk about Black death and we talk about Black suffering and we talk about Black oppression in this country. And then we get to Black History Month when we can finally celebrate our achievements. Now, I don't think we should only celebrate it in February. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that this is the month where it seems like we give ourselves permission to celebrate who we are. We should do that all the time. But today we're kicking off with you 28 days of celebrating Black history. We're taking a look at the fact that we arrived in this country. We're going to take August 1619, as that arrival point. 400 years of Black brilliance, Black survival, Black resistance, Black resilience, Black genius, Black joy, Black laughter, Black girl magic, Black boy magic. We're going to do all of that this month because we're going to keep ourselves focused on what is important. Now, I want to play a clip of someone speaking. It's 8849. And the first person who can give me a call and tell me who this person is will win a book. It's A Lynching in the Heartland, Race and Memory in America by James Madison. Now, I told you that the questions were going to get harder for Blackopoly. We're going to have Blackopoly with the clip. Let's play 8849. Tell me who this person is.
In the past year, the work of the Negro hater has flourished in the land. Step by step, the defenders of rights of American citizens have retreated. The work of stealing the black man's ballot has progressed, and 50 or more representatives of stolen votes still sit in the nation's capital. Never before in the modern age has a great and civilized folk threatened to adopt so cowardly a creed in the treatment of fellow citizens born and bred on its soil. Stripped of verbose subterfuge and in its naked nastiness, the new American creed says, fear to let black men even try to rise, lest they become the equals of whites. This in the land that professes to follow Jesus Christ. The blasphemy of such a course was only matched by its cowardice.
So who was that? Now, I'm just going to go ahead and give a little hint here that this person that just spoke was an American sociologist, a historian, a civil rights activist, a pan-Africanist, an author, a writer, an editor. So who was that? And the first person gets a first edition copy of A Lynching in the Heartland, Race and Memory in America by James H. Madison. All right, let's open up our phones, 410-319-8888. We're going to continue with our conversation for just a little bit longer, talking about whether or not we should have a Black History Month. Do you know that people are trying to organize for a White History Month? Yeah, folks, that's going on too. This is Today with Dr. K. We have James on the line from Sandtown. James, how are you?
Yeah, what's up, Dr. K?
What's up, my man?
Do the black man and woman have human rights?
Do the black man and woman have human rights? Well, according to the statements in this country, everybody is afforded human rights. And you're saying
I
no.
I'm assuming that.
Then why don't you answer the question for us? What do you think? Do the black man and woman have human rights?
You're
the calling guest. What do you think?
I want you to tell me what the Constitution says.
Well, you're calling and you're doing the teaching. You tell us. I'm sitting at your table. Go ahead, James.
You a question and you can't give me an answer. And you're a historian. Because
wait a minute, hold on. You know what, James? I'm going to stop you there. Let's just stop because maybe I'm taking it too far. I was actually giving you the space to talk. I know the answer. I thought you were calling to share, not to interview me, but to share the answer. So I appreciate you calling. So, folks, do people in this country have human rights? Human rights are afforded to people coming out of the United Nations that have been followed by the United States of America. We are afforded human rights on paper. I think the real question James was trying to get to was whether or not the actual human rights are then afforded to us person to person in our daily, everyday lives. I was giving him the space to speak. I know the answers. I have them. We have Gina on the line from Towson. Gina, how are you?
I'm doing well, Dr. K. How are you?
I'm doing well, thank you.
Just in celebrating Black History Month, I kind of wanted to celebrate some people who are doing some things now that will that'll impact history. And I just want to give a shout out to two young millennials, Jasmine Allen and Shabria Hill. They are the founders of the Charm School Project for Girls, which is an organization who for girls in the age brackets of 9 to 7 to 15. They focus on positive body image. They focus on thinking outside of the box, different types of dance, yoga, meditation, and they're teaching them to be businesswomen. They're teaching them the importance of education. Everybody can't be a teacher, a doctor, or a lawyer. What about a chemist? What about a scientist? Explore the arts. So these are two young millennials who are making history, and instead, and what they're doing is they're awakening the minds of our youth because they are our future.
And this is Jasmine Allen and Shabria Hill.
Yes.
Yes, we lift them up.
The Charm School Project for Girls.
We got it. And we'll definitely reach out to them. What a nice way to just focus on our young people, our millennials, this month by getting them on the show. Thank you so much for that. All right, folks, we're going to keep the calls going. We have Norman on the phone. Norman's a new caller from Baltimore. Norman, how are you? And welcome to the family.
Thank you, ma'am. Thank you for allowing me to be on your show.
Absolutely.
I want to comment on two things that you talked about. One
yes.
was lynching, and the other one was the Holocaust.
Yes.
Every black minister knows that lynching is a Christian ritual. It is the celebration of good over evil.
Mm-hmm.
The Bible says this when it says, hang the heathen from the tree.
Right.
But do not bury him whole in your garden. For if you do, your crops won't grow. Now, every time a black man was lynched, he was mutilated. And his parts were sold off.
Right.
This comes from the Bible. And the other thing is that you talked about the dates of 1619.
Yes.
Where our Holocaust began. If you turn to the Bible, in the very first page of the preface, it says that the 1611 edition of the King James Version came into existence. The man who started our Holocaust in America was King James.
Okay.
His son was the president who got the charter from the East Royal Company. So the man in our Bible, we call it the Good Book, is not. There's not one sentence in the Bible that says slavery is bad. But there are hundreds of terms in the Bible that says slavery is good. Every minister who has ever studied it knows that.
Right.
And if you turn, like I said, all you have to do is turn to the very first page of the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
In the preface, it tells you that date. When you turn to the Ten Commandments,
right.
it says, do not always honor the Sabbath. Do no work within your gates, neither you, your ox, nor your slave.
Right.
The Ten Commandments condone slavery. Were you aware of that?
Okay, the Ten Commandments, in terms of the days that you work, honor, the, keep the Sabbath, keep it holy, that's what you're talking about? Because I'm looking at the Ten Commandments here, so I know it's have no other gods before me, don't take the name of the Lord in vain, keep the holy, the Lord's day, which is what you're talking about, which is the third commandment, honor your father and mother so your days might be long upon the earth, not kill, not commit adultery, not steal, no false witness, don't covet your neighbor's spouse or your neighbor's goods. So which one of those are you saying an expanded meaning would be about condoning of slavery?
The number one, I think it was number seven, where it says do not covet.
Do not covet your neighbor's spouse and your neighbor's goods. That's 9 and 10.
Well, that's changed because in the Bible originally it says do not covet slaves.
Okay.
And number 10, where it talks about the Sabbath, it's easier to look it up. It says do not work within your gates, keep the Sabbath holy.
Right, that's the third commandment, yes. So how does that support slavery, though? I mean, I'm not saying, because the Bible does have a number of lines, and they're talking about, you know, submitting to the work and will of your master, and I know all of that, but I'm saying the Ten Commandments in particular, you said, supports and upholds slavery.
Well, I think it's Colossians 3rd chapter 22nd says slaves obey your earthly masters and everything.
Yes.
Do it not only when their eyes on you to win their favor, but do it for the love of the Lord. Know that you work not for God, I mean, not for man, but for God.
Right.
And it's God with whom you will reap your reward.
Right, and so do it with the sincerity of your heart. Right.
Black men always want to go to heaven. And the Bible always tells you, the first shall be last, and the last shall be first. These are all things that were used to mess our mind up.
Okay.
When we couldn't eat, they always gave you the Bible. When we couldn't have a place to live, they gave you a church.
Okay.
These were things that were done deliberately to make us subservient and stupid.
All right. I appreciate you, Norman. Thank you so much. So Norman is correct on Colossians 3:22, slaves in all things, obey those who are your masters on earth. In the Ten Commandments, that's the part where I'm having a concern with, because I took a look at the Ten Commandments. I learned them early. I'm familiar with the Ten Commandments. There's nothing there that specifically uses the language of obeying to your masters in the Ten Commandments. But I appreciate the information. We have Nadia on the phone from Pikesville. Nadia, how are you?
Hey, Dr. K. Thank you for having me.
Yes, welcome.
Oh, so you were asking, should we get rid of Black History Month?
Yes, ma'am.
So my thing is, I guess how I take it now is it's carving out a space for us to have a conversation, to speak from strength. Because I know for me, I didn't really learn about Black history in terms of myself until I went to college. That means the first 12 years of schooling,
wow,
I've learned more about Europeans, the understanding of America,
right,
from their point of view. And if, when it comes to my history, it's always spoke from a deficit.
Right.
And even though, yeah, we have our top six, Martin Luther King, Harriet Tubman, and all of this, that was pretty much the only time where I felt strong from the sense of social studies or history and things of that nature. Even when they spoke about, like, Egypt, it was never from a standpoint like, oh, you're a connection to those people. It was like, oh, these are the Egyptians. And so I think if we're going to have a conversation about do we get rid of Black history, can we have a conversation about when do we start to really have a truthful conversation about history in general in terms of what's being taught in these schools? Because like I just, you know, shared with you, my first 12 years, all I heard about was we were slaves.
Now, let me ask you this. Let me ask you this, Nadia, if you don't mind me asking. When did you graduate from high school?
2004.
Okay. The reason why I ask is because I know that one of the things that we have been doing, and I say we because I was a part of, you know, writing curriculum, is finding ways in at least the Baltimore City curriculum, just use that as an example, of making sure that we insert, that we embed teaching about African-American history within the curriculum. The problem is, though, Nadia, is that teachers don't have to do it, right? So it can be in the curriculum, and the teacher can just be a Civil War buff and spend the whole year on the Civil War, because up until this point, social studies is not a tested area. We know government is tested, but social studies is not tested. So you're not sure if they are teaching the history beyond just what they call the Big Six, right? Harriet Tubman, Martin Luther King Jr., Malcolm X, Frederick Douglass, Sojourner Truth. The sixth one rolls in and out. Now the sixth one, of course, is Barack and Michelle Obama as one. But this notion that if we want to challenge it, maybe it's not the curriculum. Maybe it's challenging what the teachers are doing, like making sure the teachers are adding this information.
Sure. And I think it's a cultural standpoint, too, because I went to a predominantly white school. So that was another layer or barrier, might I add, to the way education was delivered when I was going to school versus here, where most of the schools are predominantly children of color.
Right.
And still the narrative is the same, right? It's, you know, PWI or ACCU, or not an ACCU, but a place where, you know, we are the majority.
Right.
It doesn't really matter. My thing is having that conversation of when do we actually have a conversation of truth in terms of embedding the information that, for me, I didn't get until college, like learning about Amy Lou Hamer, Meta Evans, and things of that nature. And for me, it was like a shame. Like, why didn't I know? Why did I have to wait till I was almost 19, 18 years old to find out, oh, this was the other stuff that was going on? And if you're not getting it at home, it's like, in terms of Black history, I'm going to be honest with you, it's like, it's another month. So, like, the first week, you're going to see a whole bunch of everybody's on it, but then it kind of fades out. Not to mention it's the shortest month of the year.
All right, I'm going to stop you there, Nadia. Thank you so much. And Nadia's right, that the way that we can push this banner is to continue to have the conversation, folks, that when we kick off Black History Month, as we do, I would argue we do this all the time on this show. We are always doing Blackopoly. We're always talking about Black history. We're always talking about who we are as people. Now, no one got that voice. That voice is W.E.B. Du Bois, of course. And when we talked about his work as an American sociologist, a historian, civil rights activist, Pan-Africanist, the first Black man to get a Ph.D. from Harvard University School, Department of History. But we know the work of Du Bois, and that's who that voice was. Give me a call, 410-319-8888. We're talking about whether or not, as we kick off another Black History Month, folks, it's been 93 years and we've been focusing on this just in the long arm of history, going all the way back to when it first began. Should we continue to celebrate Black History Month? What I think is interesting is that prior to the current president we had, under the former president, President Barack Obama, during his second term, during Black History Month, we would have so many activities at the White House, from the Black History Month reception to our Black History Month panels. Like, we were inside, we were inside the White House all the time. I know during that second term of President Barack Obama, every February, I would go, my family would go, I would do panels at the White House, speak at the White House. I mean, the White House was open. The last time I was there, in his last year, I took a picture with President Barack Obama and our forever floatist, Michelle, because there were Black folks everywhere. And under this current president, there are no Black History Month activities happening. I'm sure if he invited, we wouldn't even go. But the idea that it does switch based upon who's sitting at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. Either you have someone in that chair who understands diversity and inclusion and having all voices at the table, or you have what we have at this moment. And that's something we should take very seriously as we think about the power of the Black vote. 400 years of brilliance, of genius, of resistance, of survival. 400 years of Black folks pouring into this country. I have on the phone with me Junie from Baltimore. Junie, how are you?
How you doing, Dr. K? I'm fine. I think we should, keep it because, you know, it's good educational for those who want to continue to learn about, you know, the roots. And when I was thinking about, Alex Haley, when he had to, look at it, where his family came from and how he had to do a lot of research as far as what he had to do as far as, you know, slavery was concerned and on and on and on. And when the young lady talked about Harriet Tubman, that was on my mind as well. And then I thought about Jackie Robinson, how he had to basically, you know, more or less like fit in or get into playing baseball that was all white, you know, whereas all that, you know, he sacrificed, you know, more or less to play baseball for the Brooklyn Dodgers, may I say. So it's like, whereas all, I wouldn't take it out. I would keep it because this is something, you know, from generation to generation. They need to know, even though you have Martin Luther King and, you know, all the other historians that's lined up in there, never take it away. Keep it because this is what, you know, the youth need to know.
Right.
Because if they don't know, they will be empty. That's how I see it. Because I still want to know about Black history. You know, it is, you're never too young, you're never too old to learn about where you came from, what our ancestors went through to struggle to get here.
Right.
So keep it, you know, keep it. Don't take it out. You know, those that want to sit at the round table and talk about it, let's talk about it, because this is something that, you know, will educate even the ones that do want to know. I mean, I like to sit down at the table and know about it because, you know, I'm at the age now that even though that I was in school, I came out 81, I still want to know about Black History Month because it's very important to keep our minds sharp and aware of what's going on in today's society. And
all right. I agree. Thank you so much. Folks, maybe that's where we are. I mean, I think about Black History Month. I think about celebrating Black History Month in school. And I recognize where my teaching had deficiencies, right? So my teachers would just teach about slavery. And I was always concerned about the difference between my teaching in school and my teaching at home, because my dad made it clear to us that the history of Black folks in this country did not begin and end with slavery, that we were much more than that, that we were not people who were sent here just to serve, just to be oppressed, just to be subservient, just to understand that we don't belong here. So he did the extra work. And maybe us as parents and aunts and uncles and grandparents and so on, we need to do the extra work to make sure our children, this is children of all races and all ethnicities, understand the contributions of Black people to this country. We have Fred on the phone. Fred, how are you?
Dr. K, how you doing?
I'm doing fine, sir. Thank you.
Yeah, I'm thinking of this angle here, Dr. K. Maybe we're brought here to fulfill the promise that God made to Abraham.
Okay.
He said, I'm going to put your seed in a distant land.
Yep.
Hmm?
Okay.
So I would separate you from your relatives.
Mm-hmm.
Your father's house, and I'm going to show you a different land. How else could have Abraham's seed got to America except through slavery?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I mean, slavery is a hard thing, but tell me what slavery produced. It finally put together. It made Black people in America decide to move themselves up as a group.
Mm-hmm.
Follow what I'm saying? Someone said, without the struggle, there's no progress. Had it not been for slavery, we wouldn't be where we are today, I don't think. You know, slavery forced us to produce, forced us to create places like Black Wall Street down in Oklahoma. And once we got this new freedom, so-called freedom that it gave us, we moved away from the forward progress that we were making, which is why I think that we should keep the... Well, I think the American Black Museum in D.C. is misnamed. It should be named for the American Africans.
Right.
For some reason, they want us to forget who we are. Like President Obama, I heard you speak of President Obama. He wants to remove the word Negro from the census scenario. You know that, right?
Right. Now, I want to make a note because you went to the U.S. Census about the use of the word Negro. But Negro was taken off and put back on there. I understand. It was put back on there because so many people wrote it back in. So there is this discussion about what term should be on there. They're giving me the key to wrap up. Thank you so much, Fred. Folks, we're going to hold it here for just a moment. When we come back, let's broaden this conversation up a little bit more. Let's talk about the Baltimore ceasefire. What are you doing to help promote a spirit of peace in this city? This is Today with Dr. K. I'm Dr. K. Wise Whitehead. Keep it here. Welcome back to Today with Dr. K. I'm Dr. K. Wise Whitehead. So, folks, the Baltimore ceasefire kicks off tonight. And it's important for us to understand that we are looking at finding ways to get people to not kill anyone for 72 hours. Every time I get to the ceasefire, I'm just struck by what we have to ask people to do. Like, it seems to me that is common sense. Like, let's not kill anybody, but that we have to actually set time aside. Erica Bridgeford and her team have done an amazing job getting us to focus on doing other things rather than shooting and killing one another, focusing on ways that we can support one another, encourage one another, lift one another up. That is what is going to save our city. Let me read some figures to you, and I want to ask you what else you think that we can do. In 2019, so far, there have been 27 homicides already reported. In 2018, if we go back, there were 309 homicides reported in 2018. If we go back to 2017, there were 342 homicides. 2016, 318. 2015, 342. 2014, 211. I'm not even talking about the shootings. I'm just talking about the homicides. Think of all of those families who have suffered loss in Baltimore City? And what does that mean? And where can we go as a city? If we just add them up, folks, you're talking at this point over 1,000 families that have suffered from homicides, taking the life of a loved one. I think we can do better than that. I think that there are ways that we can push a little bit harder, ways that we can push in a little bit more. I want to ask you just some suggestions about what you think we can do. And if you're interested in participating in any of the ceasefire events, I want to encourage you to visit BaltimoreCeasefire.com. They have so many events happening almost on the hour to give people something else to do. We know that the weather, that it's a little inclement weather today. It's raining, it's sleeting, it's snowing. It's supposed to freeze up. Just about everything is happening out there. And so that should hopefully keep people inside. But unfortunately, if we're looking to the weather to be the answer to what is happening here, I think we're looking in the wrong direction. We've got to find a way to do better. And I want to invite you to join the conversation and talk to me about what you think we can do. It's February. It's the first day of Black History Month. It's the first day of the first 2019 Baltimore ceasefire. We've had 27 homicides already, and it's just February 1st. 27 already. I have the names, and I want to read the names before we end this show, just because I want to lift up their names, say their names, tell their families that we're standing with them. Give me a call. 410-319-8888. I have Gene on the phone from Pikesville. Gene, how are you?
Yeah, pretty good, Dr. K. And to me, this all ties in together, whether we're talking about Black History Month.
Yeah.
It has to do with our intellect and how we are intelligent enough to solve, and I believe, all of our problems. And so, I'm going to pray, as I usually do. I'm going to talk to my neighbors.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to talk to my child, my nephew who had a terrible drug addiction, and solved that problem intellectually, got rid of it, and now is organizing our family to come together,
right.
In the form of a family reunion. I'm older now, so I leave this to the children. That's their job to do now. So as our family is coming together, we have to pull our family together. So I just want Africana intellectual studies. We talk
right.
about black history, but it's really our contribution to humanity. Is that, that's what black history is to me. Dr. Greg Kamari Carr at Howard University, Dr. Umar Johnson. These are the people, Carter G. Woodson. We should celebrate Black History Month every day.
Yes.
And in February, we come together and talk about what we taught and what the solutions are. It's our intellectualism that our brains are going to get us out of this. So thank you, Dr. K.
I agree with that. Thank you so much. I just want to add to what Gene said. He said our brains, our intellectualism will get us out of this. I also think our creativity will get us out of this. I think the fact that we know how to do something that Dr. Jessica Marie Johnson said at the beginning of the show, that we love each other hard, I think that will get us out of it. I think if we add these things together, this is how we move forward, by recognizing that we are here to save and support one another. We can't look to a government to save us. We can't look to anyone outside of our community to save us. Like, we're here to save each other, support each other, lift each other up. And think about the folks that have been lost so far. We know some of the names that I have here: Calvin Gilbert, Tommy Graham Jr., James Rucker, Ronald Good, Alvin Stewart, Harold Blandon Jr., Melvin Harper, Devontae Robinson, Corey Dodd, Dennis Lawson, Carlise Mabel, Rennie Milligan, Gregory Sinclair, Demetrius Rich, Ankita Verma, Anthony Roberts, Renika Howard, Tavon Wilson, Troy Harrison, Tavon Hammond, Ikeem Isaac. Those are the 27 people that have been lost in our community to homicide since January 1st, 2019. We definitely extend our prayers to the families and to the friends of these 27 people. We have William on the phone from North Baltimore. William, how are you?
Good evening, Doc. Peace. I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm doing well, thank you.
Well, to speak to your question for tonight, first, I would say we definitely got to, well, the demographic itself has to be willing to accept that it's going to take some significant time to get to certain points. That's the first thing. The brother that spoke just a few minutes ago, yes, we need to pursue this from an intellectual position. That way we avoid of color, economic status, and things we can physically see, so to speak. But to be specific, I think one thing that can happen, and you should have love incorporated into everything you do to cover that base, the demographic needs to look at and strongly consider thinking towards a direction of nationalism. Can be an offshoot of pan, Africanism, whatever you want to say, but some concept of nationalism to the point where we can start to see a flag, currency, language, culture, and so forth. And not to say that there's anything going in the direction of doing away with America. That's not on the agenda at this point. Because you could, technically, the demographic should have dual citizenship.
Right.
But specifically the ceasefire. If we look at what ceasefire is, and if we want it to be successful, if we want to implement it and we want it to be successful, you have to definitely look at it from one of its major points from a military perspective. You have to have at least three parties at the table to negotiate. Right now, I'm going to say, and if I'm incorrect, someone definitely redirect me, but who negotiated the cease firing, and who's doing the firing? Because let's just say, and what we know on a global standpoint, if there's a ceasefire, ultimately there's a significant embodied force or army, UN or whatever you want to call it, to have the two opposing sides hold either to get the wounded and the dead out and the women and children,
right,
renegotiate resources or what have you. But nationalism, there can't be a ceasefire if we haven't even identified the side. Hope is one thing, but like Capleton said, that's not going to work right now.
Right.
We got to have something from theory to application.
Right.
Oh, and Doc, and I have to say this because it's real. We've got to be willing to accept the reality that it's going to get worse.
Ugh.
And I keep saying this. And I know some listeners, some of them probably agree or whatever have you. I'll end on this. We cannot forget while we're building or going into said direction, America right now is the place where you have the right to be wrong and to pull someone away from that intellectually. That's a task in itself.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. I appreciate you calling, as always, William. I appreciate you. Folks, a ceasefire, just so we're all on the same page, because William brought this up, and I think it'd be good to just follow up. A ceasefire, the actual definition, is a temporary suspension of fighting, typically one during which peace talks take place. It's a truce. So the Baltimore ceasefire that Erica Bridgeford and her team worked to do, which I really appreciate, is asking all of the folks who are involved in the lifestyle where you have a number of homicides that tend to take place, to suspend that, a temporary suspension of fighting. We're not asking for a 365-day ceasefire. We're just doing 72 hours. Let's do some peace talks. Let's have a truce. Let's find a way to work ourselves away from having to have so many families touched and impacted by this tragedy. 410-319-8888. It's the first day of Black History Month, and it's the start of the Baltimore ceasefire for February 2019. We have Zeke on the phone from Northeast Baltimore. Zeke, how are you?
How you doing? It's Z.
Z, how are you?
Yeah, I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing well, thank you.
That's wonderful. I'm glad you decided to review the Black History Month and what it's all about and who we are, you know, and all of the wonderful things that you mentioned, us being Black genius, Black resilience, Black survival, innovators.
Thank you.
Regeneration, all of that.
All
but
of it.
Nothing is going to change until we come to the table to talk and we include God in it. We have to go back to prayer because it does work. Oh, what peace we often forfeit and would need the pains we bear, all because we do not take it to the Lord in prayer. And that's what we need to do. That's before we meet and decide to come together as a group. If we have survived 400 years of slavery, it was because our foremothers and fathers prayed to get us through. And we have to tap back into our brilliance and our consciousness and do that. That's what we have to do.
Yeah, we have to do that.
We're intelligent people. We are survivors. We can tap back into our brilliance. There is an answer. And when we include God, he will show us the answers.
I appreciate that. Thank you so much, Z.
So,
folks, I like the way that Z put that out. I mean, because we know that one of the things that our ancestors, our foremothers and forefathers used and believed in was the power of prayer. And not just praying with your mouth, but praying with your hands and doing the work. Not just praying with your mouth and your hands, but praying with your feet and being willing to stand, like praying with all of it. And looking for ways to resist, looking for ways to survive, and dare I say, looking for ways to thrive here in this country. It's not just 400 years of survival and 400 years of struggle and 400 years of oppression, but it's also 400 years of genius and brilliance and resilience and 400 years of joy and laughter, a family. Like, you know what, folks? I go back to what I said yesterday. They tried to bury us. They did not know that in this country, Black folks are seeds. We're going to take root and we're going to sprout up. 410-319-8888. It's the first day of Black History Month, and it's the kickoff to the 72-hour Baltimore ceasefire. Give me a call. Let's talk about how we can turn this city around. I'm not even talking about changing the world right now, right? That's too big for us right now. I'm not even talking about changing the country. That's too big for us right now. Can we change this city? Can we do that? 410-319-8888. I have Kenneth on the phone from Baltimore. Kenneth, how are you?
I'm fine. Where were we?
Where were we before we got to America, before we begin this conversation, where we were yesterday? Like, what do you mean, where were we?
What subject were we on?
Well, now, we have had, I'm glad you asked, Kenneth, in case people coming into the conversation. We had two topics on the table. In our first hour, we talked about Black History Month. And we discussed whether or not, since today is the first day of Black History Month, should we continue having Black History Month? We continued that conversation till 4:30.
Okay, and then the rest of it I got.
What's about the Baltimore ceasefire?
And I had an answer to that. You know, when you were a little girl, you were always trying to find answers to stuff. You know, you grew up in my neighborhood in Southeast Washington. You always had books and you had these big glasses on. Always trying to solve problems. But anyway, to some of your answers, listen. I'm going to ask you a question. When did they start teaching Black history? We were late getting that criteria into the schools, the Black history, weren't we?
Right. And it depended upon where you were. Now, I went to Bertie Bacchus and McKinley Tech, and there was a lot of Black history taught there in D.C.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, the other thing was the murderers in the city.
Yeah. Oh, yes. And the other thing is talking about the fact that today is also the first day of the Baltimore ceasefire. It's a 72-hour challenge where they're asking people, don't kill anybody for 72 hours.
Okay, well, I have a suggestion to that.
Okay.
Okay, and then I'm going to go. We have to find out what's making people kill each other, particularly black people. And there's white, just as many whites as there are blacks, you know. Is it mental illness? Is it poverty? or is it plain old ignorance, or is it, you know, the fact that, you know, people just are afraid or what, you know? And then my solution would be all the young men out there who want to shoot people and kill their kids, send them over to Afghanistan, you know?
So send them out of the country at this point.
Yeah, and so when they get back, they won't never want to see a gun again, you know? But we got to do some hard things to solve a hard problem.
All right. You know, I agree. I mean, we got to make some hard decisions to solve a hard problem. What's interesting, folks, thank you so much for calling, is that this is not hard. I don't think that this is hard. I think what is hard is not the thinking of solutions. The hard part is the applying the solutions. We've had people much smarter than myself who have come up with ways that we can save our Black community. We can go all the way back to the days of Douglas and Mary McLeod Bethune. We can go all the way back to Fannie Lou Hamer. We can talk about Harriet Tubman. We got people who have, for years, given us solutions, either through their writings, the example of their life, their op-eds, their speeches. Ida B. Wells is another one who talked about ways that we can save our communities and save ourselves. It's not the solutions, the brainstorming part. That's not the hard part. It's the applying the solutions. That is the difficult part, and getting people to stick to the application of the solution so that we can get saved and we can save ourselves. That's where we're having a difficult time. I have Dickens on the phone from Baltimore. Dickens, how are you?
I'm well. Also, first time caller.
Oh, wow. Welcome to the family.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I'm looking at where, we need to keep Black History Month. Not only do we need to keep Black History Month, we need to take January and make it a pre-Black History Month.
go ahead and start it early.
Yeah, because, like you said, February is the shortest month. And just to put out the famous six, you know, we got a lot more people of color that they can talk about other than just them, and you know, just putting out the truth about, you know, our history,
right?
Instead of the lies of the history, you know what I mean? And with the with that, you know, a lot of these young ones don't know the history. So with learning the history, that may change the mindset,
right,
of some of the things that's going on with these shootings now. Whereas though they would respect each other, respect one another more. But with that part, you know, that starts at home. You know, when they took the beatings out of the homes, where,
right,
you can't discipline your child.
Well, so we should turn that.
My parents,
right,
in the street. Who are you that I can't disrespect in the street?
Right. Now, you know that is a controversial area. I know it's a whole different level. We need to get Dr. Stacey Patton up in here. But we can't just say that because they took beatings out of the home, that's what led
beatings
us to this. Okay. Okay.
The fact of disciplining your children like you need to, whereas though, so the children, like, if I can disrespect, I got a number to call and, because I'm disrespecting my parent. My parent want to discipline me. Who are you that you can discipline me or correct me in the street, and I can disrespect my own parent in the street?
Okay, I'm going to stop you there. Thank you so much. We have Ayana on the phone, a Baltimore City school teacher. Ayana, how are you?
I'm well, Dr. K. How about yourself?
I'm doing well. I'm glad you're giving a call. I hope you sound like you're driving. Be careful out there.
Right, yes, ma'am. I am a teacher who teaches African American studies at my school.
Yes.
How I have seen how students really respond to love and just really are just excited to learn about who they are, where they come from, and all of the origins and greatness of who we are, as well as the struggle and the beauty in our triumphing through. But in terms of the ceasefire piece, I think that the more and more I study it myself and just look at as a student of history, you know, when we, through integration, you know, there was some successes there, but there was also some regression through,
right,
integration. And one of them were the Black elite leaving Black communities. And if we could have some type of going back, if we could have some type of way that we, as Black educated people, go back into these communities, you know, and I think it really should be an effort of HBCUs and churches, some of the last relics of, you know, what was really positive and powerful before integration, in terms of like Black people owning and having ownership of these entities. And being powerful within them. But if we could go back to and just begin to do, I know that there's been things like freedom schools in the summer,
right?
Opportunities for jobs, classes. I mean, these are things we really just have to utilize what we do have and work that, like having programs for people and offering pay, offering jobs, offering those opportunities. Because the bottom line, if it's black or white, whatever color, when you're crabs in a barrel, you're fighting, you're clawing yourself out. So the mindset, as the caller, the previous caller was saying, before the gentleman that you just spoke to, it is a combination of psychological. These are children that are children of trauma, okay? These are children
right.
who perhaps have had issues with family and disconnection
right.
there.
Right, right.
Positive role models, and so it's just about survival. If I got to shoot you to get what I need, hey, that's what it's going to be.
Right.
And some of the gang culture is just a replacement of the family, the absentee family that's not there.
Right.
And one thing I will say, and I know that there's a lot of controversy around the problem within the church, but one thing that the civil rights movement, one of the anchors of it was the church. And I think the church has made some mistakes there, most definitely, in losing. Because, I mean, if you look in these communities, Park Heights, what have you, what do you see? A church and a liquor store in the same corner, okay? So it's like, we got to get out there, though. We got to go out.
Right. No, you're absolutely correct. You're absolutely correct. But let me stop you there, Ayanna. I appreciate you. Thank you. And definitely drive carefully. But that's the idea that we're just talking about. Why do we have young folks who are involved in this? And we know that the adage, hurt people, we understand that. But there's got to be ways that we can flood our community with the type of love and support that people need, where they don't turn to violence as the answer for any dispute, any concern, any amount of hurt, any amount of pain, or just to pass the time, folks. We have Karen on the phone from Edgewood, Maryland. Karen, how are you?
I'm very good, Dr. K. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you for calling.
Good. You just took what I was going to say, however. I was going to say hurt people, but, you know, I'm not going to go long here. But, you know, I know that even as your previous caller, the teacher, Ayanna, just said, it's trauma. I work with children in special education. It's the needs. We've got to somehow meet those needs. And whatever that means, if it means, I like the idea of her saying people coming back. So that could be people from everywhere. It doesn't mean that they have to necessarily even live in Baltimore. I think we have to come together and bring people in that are doctors, lawyers, and give some hope. Because I think it's a lot of hopelessness.
Right.
Where they just don't feel like they have hope. So, I mean, and I think parents, and we have to be, you know, be real, there's parents, some of these children have parents that are drug addicts or not necessarily there to lead them and guide them, and they're hurt. So we have kids that are coming from hurt parents. So, and it's not judgmental in any way. It's
right.
just a matter of fact.
I like that.
It's a matter of fact. So
it's something we need to work on.
We've got to help parents. You know, we always try to help children, but we also have to help their parents.
All right. Thank you so much. I appreciate you. I think we can get one more phone call in here. I'm looking up at Justina. All right. Let's get Kevin in from Northeast Baltimore. Kevin, how are you?
Hello, Dr. K. I want to thank you for bringing all the important issues to the forefront. And also, I want to thank Ceasefire for the hard work that they're doing. In addressing this issue, I believe that we have to go back and we have to look at, like, who are the victims of these crimes. Most are black males.
Right.
Even the perpetrators are black males. So overwhelmingly, probably over 90% of the people that are dying are black males. So we got to go and capture this group probably when they're in kindergarten, from babies growing up. We can't wait till they become adults and try to offer them wraparound services. And we need to reach these males right where they're at, in the community, in their schools, communities, whatever. But we need to catch them when they're young. And we need to follow them. We need to, you know, K through 12 and beyond. And I think that's going to help. And then we can make the young people part of the solution, have them be part of the solution as well, bring them to the table. But more importantly, we need to just especially these black males, we need to wrap our arms around them.
I completely agree with you.
Get them over there. I completely agree.
So we just wrap our arms around them and be there with them. I appreciate you calling. Folks, we're going to leave it here. As we kick off the very first day of Black History Month, and as we go into the 72-hour Baltimore ceasefire, I think it is calling on us to do more, to find a way to be more involved, to find a way to make our voices heard, to find a way to understand that if we're going to change this country, if we're going to change this world, if we're going to change our community, we're going to change our city, change our block, change ourselves, then the first person we have to start with is a person who's right there with us, who is sitting beside you, who's walking this journey with you, because you can start by working on them. You can pour something different into your own children. You can give your mom another piece of wisdom. You can talk to the young brother you see every day you pass on the streets. We can do this if we do it together. Today with Dr. K is a production of WEAA. The show is produced by Justina Pollard. We had Dre Melton on the board. Isaiah helped us out as well. I want you to listen out all month because I'm going to have these Black History Moments airing all month long as we celebrate Black History Month. Remember that here on our show, your stories matter. Your voice matters. Our conversation matters. If it is happening around this world, if it's happening in this country, if it's happening in this city or in your community, if it has your ear, you better believe it has my attention. Make an appointment. Meet me back here on Monday at 3 p.m. And let's have another conversation about some issues that matter. Keep it here because right after final update from MTA, For the Culture with Faraji Muhammad. Have a good weekend, folks.